There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides, joined as ever by Sid Lowe. Firstly, an apology. We're very sorry that we didn't manage to get the podcast recorded on a Monday as usual. We've been doing this podcast for, I think this is our 11th year, and I think you can count on the fingers of one hand the times that we've missed a podcast on a Monday. But yesterday, it just wasn't possible. Sydney was coming back from Castellón, and Al and I were entertaining young children at a birthday party, so it just wasn't possible. In fact, it might have been possible to do it in the evening, but you know what, guys? We prioritised our families. So Sid had dinner with his family, and me and Al had a couple of happy kids. So sorry about that. We'll try to never prioritise our family again and, you know, not let this happen again. But it happened yesterday, and it won't happen again. I've apologised, Sydney. You don't have to.
I was just liking the idea of you and Al, the way you phrase it, you and Al entertaining small children. Were you wearing clown costumes? This is something I must know.
Sort of metaphorically, yeah. No, I mean not literally, but yeah. It was a birthday party, so we were at a birthday party, and
you're making balloon animals and all sorts.
Yeah, doing magic, and generally keeping people entertained. Anyway, we'll be podding over at patreon.com/TSFP for the rest of the week. Lots of fantastic content for our patrons. Obviously, you've got a Q&A pod every single week, a bonus pod every single week. You get two episodes a month of our series TSFP Presents and Rincón Cultural. You get Al's occasional paper reviews. You get access to the really quite fantastic and unique Spanish football fan community on the TSFP Discord. It's around €4 a month, and it is well worth some of your hard-earned money. So, if you want to have more Spanish football content, come and join us. The good thing about us recording today is that we can reflect on the Copa del Rey draw for the last 16, which happened after the round of 32, as it usually does. This is what happened in terms of the results, and there were very, very few surprises. We can talk about that in just a second, but here we go. Atleti beating Lugo 3-1, Getafe beating Espanyol 1-0, Girona winning at Elche 2-0, Rayo winning at Huesca 2-0. Bloody awful game, which I sat through all on the day of Reyes, which is the 6th of January, which is basically like Christmas Day here. So I had a whole lot of people at my house. I was like, right, sticking Rayo on. Everyone's watching this. It was absolute turgid stuff. It went to extra time as well, 0-0. And then Rayo scored in the 117th and 120th minute. So there we
go. How impressed was everybody with you? Everyone gathered around your house. Were they really pleased they'd been there for the afternoon?
Deeply unimpressed. I was getting some very unimpressed looks. Let's leave it at that. There was a bit of a shock at Mendizorroza, although not really. I mean, it was Alaves against Betis, and Alaves won 1-0. Real Madrid beating a fourth tier Arandina 3-1. Celta beating Amorebieta 4-2. Mallorca beating Burgos. Osasuna beating Castellón, which you went to see in extra time. Sevilla scraping past Ferrol 2-1. Athletic comfortably beating Eibar. Valencia beating Cartagena in extra time. Barca beating Barbastro 3-2. La Real beating Malaga 1-0. Tenerife beating Las Palmas, which was a shock. Second division knocking out the first division team in a big derby as well. And then the only huge shock that we had was Unionistas of the third tier, the Primera Ref, beating Villarreal 7-6 on penalties after a match that finished 1-1. A match that finished 1-1 took 2 days to play this game because it was suspended on the actual day that it was supposed to finish because of floodlight failure. Fortunately for us, Al was there commentating the game, at least on the Sunday. Not on the Monday, didn't stick around for that. On the Sunday you were there, Al. tell us about this surreal experience that you had.
Yeah, I think it has to be the first time I've started commentating a game and not finished it. And I should make clear the floodlight failure wasn't my fault. I didn't like unplug anything to plug in a phone charger or anything like that. I was not responsible for the power cut. Yeah, well, first thing to say, before all of that, it was a really good game, really good cup tie, really fun. I loved being there. It was a shame I couldn't be there on the Monday to see its dramatic conclusion. For listeniers who don't know, Unionistas is a great little club with a great story. This is one of two clubs in Salamanca, founded just over a decade ago after UD Salamanca, the traditional club of the city of Salamanca, went out of business. Unionistas are fan-founded, fan-owned. In many ways, they're sort of a model football club. This was a big game for them. They've had a few big cup ties in recent years. They played, hosted Real Madrid, I think it was, back in 2020. So that was obviously a big, big, big one for them. But this was pretty big with Villarreal in town. Fantastic atmosphere. It was a sellout at their little Estadio Municipal Reina Sofia. Good game, really, really good atmosphere, proper cup tie. For a lot of it, it sort of felt like extra time was maybe a little bit inevitable until right near the end, Villarreal went ahead. Brilliant goal. You thought, okay, that's it, game over. It wasn't. Unionistas equalised, 1-1, we're heading for extra time. That was when the fun and games really started. By the way, I should say, so this game kicked off at 6 o'clock. It was cold and getting colder all the time. By the time extra time was about to kick off, it was below freezing. And literally, as extra time was about to kick off, as in the players were out there on the pitch, in their positions, we're good to go for extra time, the lights went out. And what followed for sort of about half an hour after that was, I presume, sort of desperate attempts to get the lights working again. It wasn't just that the lights were out. That was the sort of the weird, the slightly confusing thing, and which led to so much uncertainty. It was sort of the lights were sporadically on and off and on and off. And sometimes some of the lights were on, sometimes others of the lights were on. Sometimes it was the floodlights, sometimes it was the stadium lighting. I don't know exactly what was going on around the back of the stand somewhere. For about half an hour, they couldn't get all the lights on. And pretty soon, because it was how cold it was, the referee got the players back in the dressing rooms. There were negotiations going on there behind the scenes. Unionistas obviously were keen to continue and get the game finished on the night. Villarreal put out a statement afterwards saying that they also wanted to continue to play. Unionistas said that didn't match what they heard from Villarreal. In the end, it's the referee's decision, of course. And in the end, after coming out to have a look around and see what was going on and stuff like that, about 40 minutes after play was halted, the referee decided to postpone the game. At that point, for about 10 minutes, from what I could see, the lights were on. Like, so I'm not sure what the issue was, if they thought they might go again. I don't know. But the decision was made to postpone the game. And the other complicating factor, of course, was that it had to be completed yesterday, on Monday. Why? Because you've got the draw for the last 16, as you mentioned. And because of the sort of the complicated, artificial way the Copa del Rey draw works, you needed a result in this game before you could have the draw. You couldn't just do the draw and say, okay, it's Unionistas or Villarreal against whoever. Because depending on which one of those teams went through, that changes the way that the draw is actually takes place, the mechanics of the draw. So you had to play it. So you had the last 16 draw was delayed. Extra time was played, kicking off at 4:30 p.m. on Monday. As you say, I couldn't be there, sadly, for that. And it's a shame I couldn't be there because Unionistas went on to win in dramatic fashion on penalties.
Certainly did. Thanks very much, Al. Great to have that first-hand account of what was a really memorable tie for more than one reason, obviously. The fact that it was postponed, again, just added to the drama. But it was packed as well on the Monday. Terrific atmosphere. I think they handed out some free tickets as well. And it was a fantastic to see Unionistas go through. Which leads, Sid, I guess, on to a sort of a more profound talking point. We'll talk about some other games in just a moment, but we have had very, very few shocks. There was this, and there was Tenerife locking out at Las Palmas, and that was it. Is there question marks about this, the draw? I mean, the fact that the format change happened a few years ago. Remember, there used to be two-legged ties, and now they've got rid of that. But this is such a orchestrated draw that it does feel very much like it's orchestrated to make sure the big teams go through.
Yeah, except it would be, I think, both unfair and possibly, what's the word I'm looking for? Possibly slightly hypocritical of us to attack it now. Because as you say, it used to be two-legged. And one of the criticisms I think we all had about the two-legged draw was that it made it easy for the big teams to go through. It denied the chance of a one-off, you know, a one-off night in which a small team plays pretty well and knocks out a big team. So in theory, the move to single-legged games should have increased the chance of big teams being knocked out. And at least to start with, it appeared to. It also is designed, because although it's single-legged, you guarantee that the smallest teams play the biggest ones. So, for example, the teams that were at the lowest level of all the teams in this round, the Segunda Division B teams, well, these days Primera Ref as they're known teams, were guaranteed, for example, to get a Super Cup team or guaranteed to get a team in Europe. And so it's designed to mean that the bigger teams play the smaller ones, which in theory is saying to those small teams, we're going to give you a chance. Not only that, because those small teams play at home. So we can have, I think, complaints about this structure, and I'll move on to some of those in a moment. But I'm not sure that it would be fair for us to frame those complaints around, look, there's no shocks happening. Because in theory, at least, it's set up to help shocks happen, because it's giving you just a one-off chance, and it's giving you that chance at home against the big teams. Now, of course, it's reducing the chance of the big teams being knocked out because it's guaranteeing that they play a smaller club. So, for example, Real Madrid knew they were going to get someone from the Primera Ref. They absolutely knew that they weren't going to get Barca or Atletico or Girona or Sevilla or whatever, right? So that part is true, so it makes it easier for them. But the conditions were set against them. And there's a very interesting, there's lots of elements that are problematic with this draw, but I think it's not actually the possibility of a shock that is the problem. I think the possibility of a shock, in theory, has been increased. Now, here come the problems. Problem number one. You are effectively making it relatively easy for the Super Cup teams to get to the quarterfinals, in theory. You're making a situation in which the Super Cup teams, you've got three rounds to get to a final. Three rounds is all it takes to get to the Cup. Now, that argument falls down a little bit because we've seen this draw and Real Madrid have now got Atletico. So there's two Super Cup teams against each other. So one of those is not going through. The other thing I think that's problematic with it is I actually quite like the idea that the smaller teams get to play at home. And yet that doesn't feel entirely fair for a couple of reasons. Number one, imagine you're an Unionistas player or an Unionistas fan. It's absolutely brilliant to have Real Madrid come to you. But it feels like a bit of a pity that you never get the chance to go to the Bernabeu, for example. And then the other part of this is, Atletico Madrid are playing against Real Madrid now in the next round of the Copa del Rey at the Metropolitano. It is the first time they have played a Copa del Rey game there in 5 years. Because being the higher placed team, they keep playing games away from home and also having not reached semi-finals. It's true they've played one game there, but they actually played it as the away team against Rayo Majadahonda. I was at that game, but Rayo played their games at their ground. So you get this slight sense, you sort of think, it feels a bit too engineered. And there's a bit of me that thinks, if this went this way, if Atletico Madrid hadn't played at home for 5 years, but it had been purely chance, I feel like I would accept it better than if it's happened this way. And look at it, right? I'm going to give you an example. A lot of the big teams, and Real Madrid, and I think Atletico are one of them, have a season ticket that includes all the cup games. Well, it doesn't include any cup games if you don't play any, right? And so there's elements of it that are wrong. I do think that there's a really big thing, which is a kind of an emotional thing maybe. It feels like we are making far too many concessions to the Super Cup. And that feels wrong to me. So the Copa del Rey draw...
Why do we think that might be?
Well, because the Super Cup generates the money because they take everyone to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, exactly. Yes. But you're making life easy for the Super Cup teams. Why? Why are we making life easy?
Because they want the same teams in the Super Cup every year. Because it's the biggest teams and they can sell it easier. And Osasuna getting there really stitched them up.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And that feels wrong to me. But I must admit, as I say, I am tempted to have a bit of a complaint about the format. But I feel like it wouldn't be right or fair or justified to have a complaint based on the possibility of upsets.
Well, we want to be right and fair and justified on this podcast. So I think you've done it in the best possible way. Let's talk about some of the individual games. And Barcelona scraping through against Barbastro 3-2. In truth, this match was a bit of a reverse of what we've usually seen from Barcelona, because usually we see them well, often we see them not play particularly well in the second half and then save themselves in the not play particularly well in the first half and save themselves in the second half. It was the reverse here. They played really well in the first half, and then in the second half it seemed to slip away from them a little bit. Certainly the control of the match. They were 2-0 up against a team from the fourth tier of Spanish football. They should have been able to see it out, but they weren't. Barbastro got back into the game 2-1. Then Barcelona got themselves ahead 3-1, and then Barbastro scored a goal in injury time to make it 3-2, and had a sort of chance right at the end as well to potentially have equalised. Xavi said he was happy with the result, but it's, again, not very convincing from Barcelona. And give us the statistics, Sydney, about how many games it's been since they last won by more than a one-goal margin.
20 games now in which they have not won by more than a one-goal margin. Now, let's caveat this by saying, you know, they've won a lot of those games, and winning by a single goal isn't necessarily a problem. But I think when a run lasts that long, it tells you something about a team that isn't convincing. It tells you that this isn't a team that ever lives comfortably. You know, that in even a bad team, in a 20-game run, it might expect to win one of them 2-0. Might expect to have had a couple of them that were completely under control and they were never nervous and they were never up against it and they never thought there's a risk here that we don't win this. And also, as you've mentioned there, quite often with Barcelona, it's gone the other way around. Give us that great stat. Is it if the games were only the first half, they'd be 14th, was it, that you said the other day? Right, so this isn't just that they've kind of been 1-0 up or 2-0 up even and the other team scored 2-1 in the 89th minute. You think, well, they were never really in trouble even if they only win by one. No, quite often, this is they've been in trouble and they've had to find a way around. Now, you could argue that in a lot of these cases, okay, but they have found a way around and that is good. But I think it tells you something about this isn't a team that you're looking at and saying, I'm convinced by these guys. This isn't a team that you're looking at and saying they're winning games well. Now, this game is a bit of an outlier in fairness because actually they were in control. And I think one of the reasons why they stopped being in control was because they thought they were in control, if you see what I mean. They were like, well, it's done, it's okay. And it's a silly penalty at the end. And if that silly penalty at the very end doesn't happen, they do win 3-1. And you do think, okay, well, there it is. But as you pointed out, against a team from Segunda Ref. So, you know, we're not talking about a top-level team. And I do think there's a problem for Barcelona. And I think it would be wrong to overplay this because they've won a lot of these games. But I think it tells you that this isn't a team that's right. It's not a team that's comfortable. And I'm going to pick up on the word you used, the choice of words. Unconvincing. And you'd said that just after you'd mentioned that Xavi was happy about it. And I think this is part of the issue here, is that when Xavi talks, you're not entirely convinced either, because he seems to think they're playing better than the rest of us think they are. Now, obviously, he's as likely to be right as we are. In fact, he's more likely to be right than we are. But you look at it sometimes and think, should you not be a little bit more worried about this? Or at least say that you're more worried about this, maybe.
Maybe he is. Maybe he just wants to project an air.
Yes, he may well be, to be fair. Of course. And absolutely, I'm not so naive as to not know that a manager is trying to condition, you know, the way his players feel and the way that we feel. And for example, the last game before Christmas, the Almeria game, before they flew around to Dallas, he really tore into his players. And we can't have it both ways. We can't be hypocrites. Here I am saying, should he not be telling us he's more worried? Well, after that game, he tore into his players and he had a go. And we said, and I still think this is true, that that tends not to end well when you start laying into your players, even if you're right.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, let's move on. I guess there isn't a huge amount to say about Real Madrid's game against Arandina. They got there in the end. It was pretty comfortable. It was 0-0 at half time, but then Joselu, Brahim, and Rodrigo scored. Nacho scored an own goal in injury time, which was wildly celebrated by the Arandina crowd and players, which was nice to see. From this game, I think maybe the thing to pick up on is Brahim's continued excellent showing and really, really good form. I mean, he's becoming the kind of player that really sort of makes things happen in games.
Yes, he does. And it's difficult, really, isn't it? Because you look at Brahim and really and truly, if you write your best Real Madrid 11, he's not in it.
No.
But if you write your 11 based on the 11 players for Real Madrid who are playing the best,
Yes.
He is in it. Yes. And that's a difficult one because obviously on the face of it, it shouldn't be. And you say, well, no, obviously you play him if he's the best informed player. But do you really play him ahead of Rodrigo or ahead of Vinicius or ahead of Bellingham? Because these are the guys more or less that occupy his position. Ahead of Joselu, maybe, depending on what kind of forward you want. But you're probably not going to play three up front. So it's not going to be him and Vinicius and Rodrigo. Mm. And yet you feel like you want a place for him and a role for him. I guess the difficulty is there isn't a really obvious natural role in the team. But I think in a way that's actually quite a nice problem for a manager to have. And I know that's a cliche, but I'm going to defend that cliche a little bit. It's different, I think, from the nice problem of a player who's playing well and it can be problematic. But I think because you've got a player who probably accepts being a substitute, but so long as it's good minutes, mm-hmm. I think he's a good kind of player to be able to put in because he changes the game even if you haven't started him. He's not one of those players who if you put him on, he's going to sulk and not play, change the game, or he's not going to be up to the rhythm of the game. He seems to be able to come on and make a difference. He's the kind of player that doesn't really fit a very natural structure. And so I think that means you can put him on in a variety of different positions so long as he's got a degree of freedom and he'll make things happen for you. So I think he's quite a handy number 12, if you see what I mean. But yeah, I do wonder if at some point Ancelotti's going to think, actually, maybe I don't play Rodrigo. Maybe I play him ahead of Rodrigo some games. Or maybe if Vinicius is still not fully fit, I play him ahead of Vinicius.
Okay. Let's see. But it's a nice problem to have, I think, for Carlo Ancelotti. Tell us about your trip to Castellón, Sid, because you went there to see Castellón beaten 1-0 in extra time by Osasuna. What was the whole sort of experience like, without going into sort of massive details of the game, but obviously what was it like going down to Castellón? I'm not sure if it's a stadium you've visited many times before, so what was it like?
I was there in the previous round of the Copa del Rey because they played Oviedo.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yes, of course.
And actually, really and truly, what the experience here was essentially the same as it had been then, in that one of the things that struck me about the Oviedo game is, obviously, you know, cards on the table, and our regular listeners know this, I'm a Real Oviedo supporter.
You are.
And Oviedo got beaten, and I shouldn't have enjoyed it. But I remember at the end of the game talking to an Oviedo fan I know, who's an absolute lunatic of an Oviedo fan, by the way. You know, one of these who thinks the referee is against us, thinks everyone else is rubbish, thinks we're being conned, and really, you know, really wants Oviedo to win above all else. And I sort of said to him at the end, God, that was really fun. He said, yeah, it sort of was, wasn't it? Because Castellón play really nice football. They're really daring. They put a lot of players up at the top of the pitch. They go at you. They try and make things happen. And they did that to Oviedo, and they were the better team against Oviedo. And they absolutely destroyed our right back in particular. They had a guy called Traore playing on the left wing who was brilliant, who didn't play in this game. And against Oviedo, they'd actually made, I think it was 10 of the 11 players had changed from the previous league game. This was more of a first team against Osasuna. Now, I'm not going to overplay this. Osasuna were the better side by a long way, had loads of chances. Raul García, the arrow up front, should have scored 5 or 6 and didn't score any. They hit the post and the bar, Osasuna. But even within that context, you had a 20-minute period where Castellón made things happen. They themselves hit the post. They had opportunities. They possibly could have had a penalty near the end. And you just look at them and think, this is really, it's a good stadium, a first division stadium. It's a noisy fan base. It's a team that's exciting. They're top of their division in Primera Ref. They feel like a club where things are happening, where there's a real optimism. And yes, they were knocked out, but this was proper. And this was enjoyable again. And there's a moment about 2 minutes from the end where the fans start clapping. And they just stand up and start clapping. And Jagoba Arrasate, the Osasuna manager, said after the game, he said, that was really nice. He said, as an away manager, really nice. I thought, yeah, this is a proper place. This is a first division club, and I'd like to see these guys back. And actually spoke briefly to Arrasate post-game. And this wasn't just a thing he was saying for public consumption. He'd really enjoyed it. And he was saying, you know, he said one of the things that he felt that was important was that Osasuna kind of respected both the fact of the Copa del Rey and the opponents they're up against by doing it properly, you know, by playing properly, by being aggressive, by going at them, by playing a proper game. And it was a proper game, and it was a lot of fun.
Who's their owner, Sid?
Well, their owner is that they've got an ownership structure. Essentially, their owner is a Canadian Greek professional gambler who you may well have heard of. You're going to pronounce the surname better than me, so I'm going to allow you to pronounce the surname.
His name is Haralambos Vulgaris.
Yeah, Bob.
Bob.
Vulgaris is the surname. Bob is his first name. Well, Bob is his first name, and everyone knows him as Bob. They've bought the club, and essentially the idea is to construct a club that can reach the First Division, driven, of course, by very, very, very impressive statistical analysis. As I say, he was a professional gambler. He worked as the he worked at the Dallas Mavericks in basketball as an analyst of statistics and game structures and so on. And there's a determination to play a kind of an attractive style and to push men forward. And it's really quite exciting. And the fans seem to be very, very much behind this. And they look like they will go up this year. They were beaten in the playoffs last year. They look like they'll be in the second division next year. And I think this is a club. Obviously, there's a limit to how much you can expand when you're in a city like Castellón, but I think this is a club that has the approach, the financial backing, the analytical capacity, the structure now to reach the First Division, not imminently, but probably in the next 4 or 5 years, or possibly in the next 4 or 5 years.
Let's see. They're a historic club with a big fan base, and let's see when they get back up, because it does feel like, as you said, they are in the ascendancy. So this week, Sid, we've got midweek football involving Spanish teams, but not in Spain. It's the Spanish Supercopa. We'll talk about that in just a second. Before we do that, let me tell you what that last 16 draw in the Copa del Rey looks like. And we've got some really exciting looking ties. We've got Getafe against Sevilla, Athletic Alaves and Tenerife against Mallorca. That was on the Tuesday next week. Then on Wednesday, Valencia, Celta, Girona and Rayo. And then Thursday, you've got Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid. You've also got Osasuna against Real Sociedad and Unionistas against Barcelona, to be confirmed when those matches are played. So, it's a pretty good draw, Sid.
It's a really good draw. I'm just sort of shaking my head and scoffing a little bit at the fact that there's two games to be defined. I just think it's absurd. And you watch, there will be games in La Liga that get moved. And it'll to be defined because of the Super Cup. Well, why? Fix the games now. It doesn't matter what happens in the Super Cup.
Well, I think
it shouldn't matter what happens in the Super Cup.
I think Atletico Madrid's game will definitely be moved.
Yes,
because they're
the league one.
The league one, because they're away at Granada on Saturday the 20th, and they're playing on Thursday night in the Copa del Rey. So that will definitely be moved.
Oh, well. But they needn't play on Thursday night in the Copa del Rey. That's what I mean. You don't need to do this. So you create a problem that then someone else has to fix moving a league game. You create a cup game and then the league game has to move. No, how about that league game is already fixed. Create a cup game that fits a copper game that fits around that league.
So why
game.
Doesn't it work like that? Like, does the Federation have more power than La Liga? I mean, could they say this is
they
being
shouldn't
played?
Have.
So why can't La Liga just go, sorry, mate, no, you can't do that?
I don't understand that. I genuinely don't have an
this.
Answer for you.
We fixed this already, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the date.
This is the date.
This is the date.
This is the date.
It's absolutely absurd. Anyway, that's by the by. Let's not allow ourselves to be dragged down into that. But it drives me mad. And one of the reasons why it drives me mad is no one ever says anything.
No.
And it drives me mad that it feels like I am this lone lunatic who's upset about this. Partly because I'm trying to organise my own schedule.
I'm with you.
But genuinely, no one ever says anything about the fact that fans are constantly pissed about.
I'm here,
it's amazing.
I'm here holding your hand, Sydney, in our moment of lunacy.
Anyway, you're right. It's a really quite a fun Copa del Rey draw. Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid is obviously the standout tie, but I like the fact that Barcelona are going to Unionistas. It feels like, you know, a big tie, a big kind of like, let's have a small team against a really big team. A big team, and I'm not going to overplay this, but a big team that maybe is a little bit vulnerable. Maybe Unionistas will feel they can have a bit of a go at them. Maybe if the conditions are not that great, if it's really cold and so on. Then you've got, say, you've got a series of other good games. I mean, you were talking about the surprises, by the way, and they're not very many surprises. I always felt like Sevilla might have gone out against Racing Ferrol and nearly did. Las Palmas against Tenerife was always a possibility, so it's quite nice that Tenerife are in. We've got a second division team there. I think it's a really, really fun cup draw. The cup kind of happens so quickly in January.
Yes.
You sort of don't always have time to properly appreciate it, though. That's the only other thing, I suppose.
Bam, bam, bam. And then we're in the semis. Those fixtures are going to be taking place next week. So watch out for those. Before that, we've got the Spanish Super Cup in Saudi Arabia. And tomorrow it's Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid. And then on Thursday it's Barca against Osasuna. I wonder which derby the two sets of fans would rather win Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, the one tomorrow in the Super Cup or the one in the Copa del Rey the following week.
On the face of it, the answer is really, really obvious.
The Copa del Rey.
On the face of it.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna chuck the caveats in. On the face of it, it's really obvious it's Copa del Rey because the Copa del Rey is bigger than the Super Cup. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And yet it is true, and I will admit this, despite the fact that I don't like the fact that the Super Cup has been taken to Saudi Arabia, the creation of a Final Four is quite good. It does make for this sense of a competition that kind of feels kind of quite exciting. The other thing, of course, is that we're talking about the last 16 of the Copa del Rey. So if you say to an Atletico Madrid fan, or a Real Madrid fan, but I think it's more about the Atletico fans probably this. Do you want to win the Super Cup game and the Copa del Rey game? They go, well, obviously the Copa del Rey game, except that then there's still some way to go to the final. Right. Whereas if we win the Super Cup one, we're in the final. And there's a potential competition. If it was as simple as, would you rather win the Copa del Rey or the Super Cup? The answer is Copa del Rey every single time. But in this scenario, I don't know. The other thing is, of course, is you can't help but thinking, does winning one of them condition the others? And of course, the cynic in me, or maybe the cynic's not the right word, the guy who's seen a million Madrid derbies over the years, can't help but thinking, we all know the answer to this, that Atletico will win one of these three games, but somehow, whatever happens, it will end up working out nicely for Real Madrid. Like, somehow they'll win the one that sort of matters more, if you see what I mean. So in other words, if Atletico were to win the cup one, they then won't win the cup anyway.
Yes.
If Atletico were to win the Super Cup one, they either won't win the Super Cup or Real Madrid will go on and win the cup and they'll think, oh no, if we'd won that, we'd have stopped them winning the cup. One way or the other, there will be a way through which Atletico feel bad about how it ended. That's my suspicion.
You're very, very cynical, Sidney.
I am. Yes, I've seen this happen to Atletico a lot over the last 20 odd years.
Well, let's see what happens to Atletico. They're playing Real Madrid tomorrow, and then we've got the other semi-final, Barcelona against Osasuna. Bloody hell, it would be amazing and brilliant if Osasuna won the whole thing, although they are the rank outsiders in this.
Here's another thing for you.
Go on.
If Osasuna win the whole thing, they will still make only €2 million in prize money.
Yeah.
If Barcelona or Real Madrid win the whole thing or lose the whole thing, they will still make four times that.
Yeah. Yeah, not exactly fair, but it is what it is. There's many things about this Super Cup that absolutely stink, but we're not going to get into it right now. That's it for today's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. A day late, but hopefully still as entertaining as ever. We're over at patreon.com/TSFP for the rest of the week if you want to join us. And if you don't, that's okay. We'll do another podcast for free next Monday, we promise. Adios.
Cheerio.